some highway east of Omaha.
Everybody, this is Kim Justice, your host, your regular Wednesday host of Brain Injury Radio. And don't panic about that intro. Craig is in the process of making us all new ones, and so I made a bit of a spoof. I'm the only one of our hosts here in Middle America. We are scattered all over the country, so my husband and I were just having a little fun, and I threatened to play my Omaha Mix clip until he finally gets my new intro done. So, again, you didn't tune in to the wrong place. This is Brain Injury Radio, and I'm Kim Justice. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week with a number of different hosts. We're on about 5 hours a day. All of these live shows are just about immediately archived for on-demand listening. So if you come into the show late or you want to replay it, post it in your support groups or newsletters. The same link you use to get in will also allow you to listen to the archive. The other way you can access the show is by dialing in and listening through your phone. The number to call in is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. Also want to thank my Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. Their website, and I'll type it in the chat room in just a minute, is lapublishing.com. Now, not only does my guest do writing and have a book on Lash Publishing, I do as well. But when you go to Lash, you will see that all of their publications are brain injury related. So whether they're survivor stories for caregivers, for veterans, for professionals, more and more we hope, make sure to check out Lash. They've got some wonderful information. And the other thing, and I'm going to ask our guest when we come on, I meant to call Marilyn today and I didn't, I guess. I had a real busy day today, but when you go to lapublishing.com, if you look over on the left side toward the top, you'll see Brain Injury Journey. And that is the magazine that they debuted back in April. Comes out 6 times a year, and that going to Brain Injury Journey, clicking on that will take you to the subscription page where you can subscribe for the hard copy to be sent to your home. Or if you scroll down a little further, you can't beat the price. They have a free online version of the magazine. It's the same magazine. It's just an online magazine. But I encourage you to sign up. Whether you know someone who has a brain injury or not, at 3.5 million of these things going on a year, it's probably good to know a little something about it, whether you would be a caregiver or a survivor, which will bring me to my guest in just a moment. This show is called Recovery Now, and we're a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed, This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest like tonight. Other nights we'll introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. The second part of the show is open mic mixed with some great indie music sure to inspire. Now, I think without any further ado, because I promised her I wouldn't keep her late tonight, she's aside from all of this holiday hustle and bustle we've got, she's got a lot of things going on too. But my guest tonight is Catherine LeBlanc, also known as Cats, if you caught that catchy title. And obviously, when someone gets hurt, that's a me ow. So if you hadn't figured it out, that's where we got the title, Cats Meow. But as an accomplished athlete, author Catherine LeBlanc knew the risks of sports injuries. As a physician's assistant, she knew how the brain and body work. But the concussion she sustained in a team handball game was compounded by a rear-end high-speed auto truck collision 2 months later, and her life changed completely. Unable to find the hope, reassurance, and inspiration she needed while struggling with her physical and cognitive challenges, she wrote, "Tell Me This." Her prose captures the complex feelings and emotions that are shared by so many individuals with concussions and brain injuries, but she does this with clever graphics and short phrases or snippets that make reading this guide a real pleasure. You'll pick it up again and again. And I know I will. She was kind enough to send me a copy, and I've just really liked what I've seen, and I know I'm going to be carrying it around in my purse. So without further ado, I introduce you to Cats LeBlanc. Are you with us?
Yes, thanks, Kim.
Well, I'm so glad you could be here with us tonight, and thank you so much for sending me a copy. Tell Me This, Encouragement and Hope After Brain Injury. Now, anyone looking for a copy of this can find it at Lash Publishing. And again, that website is lapublishing.com. And I'm going to put in, she actually has cats, but it's LeBlanc, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, and it's cats with a Z, like zebra, not cats with an S.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, why don't we start at the beginning? I gave kind of an overview, but, well, first of all, you had experience. How long had you been a physician's assistant? And I know a little bit about their program. So you had medical experience. One thing I'd like to ask you from that side before we get started with your story, I'm always curious to know these things, is how much did you learn in school as a PA about brain injury in a broad sense, coupled with post-concussive syndrome and all of the things that we're hearing so much about now? I guess, when did you go through PA school?
Right.
How many years ago? And then how much information did you get?
Sure. That was sort of a lifetime ago. I went to the PA program at Duke University in 1984 to 86. And at that time, pretty much what you learned was someone comes into the ER and you check their pupils and do a quick mental status exam. And if there's anything that makes you think they could have a subdural hematoma, you run screaming from the room to get the neurosurgeons in as fast as possible. And that's about it. You know, we had basic understanding about concussion that when I was a student trainer at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, we used to just call it getting your bell rung. And people
right.
would sit out for a little while, and that was about it. There wasn't really any concept of post-concussion syndrome at that time. And so it was quite a shock for me when I kept asking questions to my medical providers because I wanted answers because I didn't know what they were. And
right.
it was very, very disturbing.
You know, that's one of the things and the reason I asked you that concerns me now is whether I have on a PA or an MD or a nurse of some kind, they still aren't getting a lot of information. Now, I would hope that, you know, at this moment in time, I think it's a great time for all of us to be doing what we're doing. Brain injury is kind of center stage right now with the help, unfortunately, on one standpoint, you know, two pretty large special interest groups, the NFL and the veterans coming home,
sure.
where the TBI and PTSD will be the signature injuries of that war. And so it's certainly a time that the public anyway, hopefully, is getting a much deeper awareness, and hopefully they'll be putting a little more in the textbooks for the traditional medical community as well, because, you know, that getting your bell rung from the time I was a kid, which was a lifetime ago, and now, you know, there's still, I've heard stories recently, even in the last couple weeks, same kind of thing where, you know, a kid goes in after playing sports. I have a girlfriend that's got a couple of junior high kids, and they basically did the same thing, you know. The kid did wind up with a concussion, but when he went, you know, they shined the light in his eyes and asked him if he knew his name and the date and a couple of questions like that, and nothing appeared, you know, to be out of the ordinary, like in the old days. They didn't do any precaution, you know, the young man started throwing up overnight and having some difficulty. They did determine it was a concussion, but I could not believe it. The mom, and she knows what I do, although I'm not sure she's ever thought she's had a reason to come listen, but, you know, she coached her boy. She was quite a jock in her day,
mm-hmm.
and has three sons, and when they were at the youngest level, she was actually coaching their soccer team, and now, you know, in junior high, the school has a coach, but, you know, you can bet she's one of those parent coaches on the sidelines, and I could hardly believe it and almost fell off my chair when she said that the playoffs were coming. And
right.
her son didn't want to miss the playoffs, and she didn't
right.
want him to miss the playoffs. And the kid had just
right.
had a concussion, and it's suspected that he's had another a couple of years ago that she called a borderline concussion. But I just wanted to scream, you know, and then we'll get into your story, but, you know, from my standpoint, if you happen to have seen my website and what it looks like to have a craniotomy after
right.
a ruptured brain aneurysm.
That should get anyone's attention.
Yeah, I look at these little boys and I think, seriously, the playoffs in junior high is worth this? You know,
right.
I don't know. I was
disappointed. Denial's a powerful thing. Denial's a powerful
it is.
Thing. And adrenaline and winning can be very driving forces. And it's very subtle. You know, when you look at, you know, you look at once your hair grew back in, people looked at you and probably thought you looked fine, unless you were staggering or stumbling or having a hard time with your speech or something like that. And a lot of times kids look okay, or I looked okay.
Yeah.
And
me
so
too.
It's not like there's blood pouring out from something obvious, pumping away that says, okay, something major's wrong. And
mm-hmm.
we're very visually oriented, unless somebody has a bone coming out through, you know, their skin or whatever. You know, it takes a lot to have a player be taken off the field. they're changing that. There's a lot of new rules that are coming down, but you still hear these stories, and you would think she's right, you know, two steps away from someone who could be advocating for her son right there on the field. And yet,
yeah,
everybody's geared up and thinking about what's coming, and it's tough. And it's really tough for, even with all the education, how many times kids are now being asked to report on their buddies because people don't want to come forward and say, they got their bell rung, or I'm feeling a little weird, or which way is my end zone? And so if anyone says it's their responsibility to go to the coach and say, hey, look, Bobby just said he's not sure which end we're defending. I think somebody should look at him. And every day you see these stories. The post-concussion syndrome is so scary. These are kids who go in, athletes who've had a concussion, they go back in and they get hit a second time, and the brain has this incredible chemical reaction that happens, and you can't resuscitate someone. That's it. And no one thinks that that's going to happen because it's so tragic and so preventable.
Right. Well, and it's never going to happen to me, right?
Yeah,
it's always
exactly.
going to be somebody else that happens to. It ain't going to happen to me, but... So you, at least, were at the time of your intro to the personal world of brain injury, were also athletic, very athletic. Tell us a little about that. What were you doing?
Sure. I was a team handball goalie for, at the time, the name of our team was the New England Freeze, but we're now called the Boston Team Handball. In college, I had played soccer for UW, and then also I played ice hockey in high school. We didn't have varsity sports for females at that time, so I played actually with the women's club team at the university as a high school kid. So things have changed a lot. What's exciting to me was that I got the chance to go team handball. If people Google it, it's not very common in the U.S. It's the number two sport in Europe. So all your European listeners will be like, wow, they really have handball in America. yes, we do. And I loved it. I loved it much more than playing ice hockey. I loved it much more than being in goal for soccer. It's an extremely fast game. The athletic ability is tremendous. It's very exciting. People say, well, basketball is exciting. And I say, yeah, but there's no goalies. So I know I'm biased, but a goalie really makes or breaks a game. So in 2009, my team, we didn't have enough people to travel from Boston to UNC in Chapel Hill, and the UNC alumni team needed a goalie. So I was farmed out and went down for a Halloween tournament, and we were playing the UNC alumni. I didn't tell them that I went to Duke that day. I told them the next day. for anyone who knows about the rivalry between UNC and Duke. So they were like, that's okay. We like you now. Anyway,
yeah.
On the first day, we were playing New York City, and there's the circle in front of the goal goes 6 meters around in front of the goal, and court players aren't allowed to come into that space. But they can often shoot from 9, 10 meters out, 7 meters, 7 meter penalty shots are the distance. So they're pretty close. And if you fall across the line, if you're airborne when you take the shot, that's fine. You can be airborne and be falling into the circle. So the ball can come pretty close, pretty hard, pretty fast. And at the time, there was a screen from the defender, so I didn't see when the player took the shot. The next thing I knew, I was just sort of standing there, and the referee was saying, are you okay? And I said, I don't know. And I just sort of stood there for a minute. And then they're like, well, she's not falling down, and she's not asking to go off the court, so let's go. It's time to start the game again. So I kept playing, and I had a headache that night. But I've had headaches before, and I've gotten migraines before, and so I just, you know, kept going. The next day we played, we came in second, we got medals. It was my first indoor tournament. I was super excited and went home feeling just higher than a kite. And super, super proud because not only that, most people at that time didn't know that I was actually 44 or 45 years old. I kept it secret, except for the Federation, of course, knew because we had to be registered. But I was afraid they wouldn't let me play. But they needed goalies. So then 2 months later, December 31st, I was driving down to New York City to watch the first annual Big Apple handball tournament. And I was driving my adorable little baby blue Beetle convertible. It started snowing on 91 South in Connecticut. And I'm from Wisconsin, and you know it snows in Nebraska, it snows in Wisconsin, it starts snowing.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, I'm going to get into the center lane. People are driving a little too fast, and I don't really trust Connecticut drivers anyway. So I pull into the second lane. I'm slowing down, and the next thing I know, everyone's slamming on their brakes and smashing into each other. And there are about four cars to my left that are smashed into each other and two cars to my right. And I'm just in the center lane, perfectly stopped. And I'm just saying to myself, oh, hooray, I'm fine. This is great. I didn't hit anybody. And then, bam, this one of those Hemi Ram, well, I don't even know what they're called.
Oh.
All I know is when I looked back, the horns of the Ram were on the hood, the back of my car, and I was hit. I was stopped, and they figure she was going about 50 because the roll bar ejectors, even though my roof was up for the convertible, they're these roll bar head things that shoot up, and it felt like all of a sudden people were in my back seat because these like things were there. So I had a headache immediately, and they had to close both sides of the highway. There were that many accidents.
Wow.
So by the time I got back to Massachusetts, I realized things weren't okay.
You actually drove back.
Well, I did. I had to stop. I started getting really nauseous. I went to a friend's in Hartford. I won't go into the whole story, but I went. Luckily, I was towed right nearby a friend's house that I knew, so I was able to get a rental car and go to her house. But I got back to Massachusetts, and luckily there was a cancellation with Dr. Cantu, who's one of a very, very famous concussion specialist and neurosurgeon that's in the Boston area. And he was able to see me. So he put me on super strict restrictions, and I followed them, and then I seemed to be doing okay, and then I started back to training, back to strength training, and I would try things, and they'd all ask me, so how are you doing? How do you feel? And I'm like, I don't know. I just feel different. And I struggled a lot through various times throughout my whole recovery process, being able to articulate what it was that I was feeling, and knowing that I had this medical background, I should be able to put into words what it is that I'm feeling so they can figure out what's wrong. And right. Oftentimes it was really, really tricky. And I remember once, finally, I was just so exasperated. I was talking to the speech pathologist and the cognitive OT, and I said, we don't have words for this. I studied all my medical terminology. I worked as a PA for years. Like, I don't know how to tell you what this is. And so I thought, how does anyone tell someone who doesn't even know? I mean, I would give these different examples or whatever, and so she would say, oh, okay. And I would say, it's not so simple as to just say I'm having memory retrieval. I said, it's like I go to the giant file cabinet in my mind, and instead of being able to whiz like light years into whatever drawer I need, whatever file I need, whatever paper I need, whatever part on the paper, and bing, I get my answer, I'm like standing there. Nothing's happening. No drawer is opening. It's this blankness that I couldn't explain. It's as though I'm outside my brain, and I can't even start to go look for this thing that I'm trying to remember.
I think that's a
word.
Really good description. I think.
Yeah, but we should have a medical terminology word for, you know, that whole long story. You know, that's like you say a word in Greek, and in English it's like four sentences.
Right. Well, I mean, as far as you telling other people, it's, you know, the irony isn't lost that they're in the business, but they've never had the business. When you described it, I'm like, yeah, I've experienced that a lot, you know, and then you process more slowly, you know, finally you find the drawer and then you kind of get in, but you forgot what you were looking for in the first place. It took so long to find the drawer. I mean, that scenario you gave could go on and on and on. And
oh,
how is somebody
who's
never experienced
that? Because then you're sort of wandering
that.
Around and they're going, if I get close, I think I'm going to figure it out. So I just need to kind of hang out and just show me the general zone I need to be in, and I'll get it. I'm sure I'll get it. And and then you're sort of lost there, and then finally the person that's staring at you goes, well, just kind of go on. Jump over that part. But, yeah, I used to try to tell people, okay, you talk about high-speed Internet. So before I had super, super high-speed Internet, I had, yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen the TV show The Big Bang Theory, but there's a character on it named Sheldon, and he has this phenomenal memory. And my memory wasn't as great as Sheldon's. I couldn't tell you what I ate on May 13th, but I had a really good memory. And so when I would tell people I'm forgetting things, they're like, oh, I forget things all the time. And I'm like, no. And I'd be like, I forgot my keys. And they'd be like, oh, I forget my keys all the time. I'm like, yeah, but I left something on the stove, and I left town, and I had to call my neighbor, who's 86 years old, to get in my apartment and turn it off. And they're like, well, you shouldn't leave the house with the stove on. I'm like, right. So then at a certain point, I realized one of the main things, the other thing is when you yourself are cognitively impaired, your ability to solve your problems and figure them out is also impaired. So I wasn't really able to, as much as I thought I could wear the suit of figuring out all my problems, I couldn't, as well as not being able to describe it. But no one was saying, you know, this is new. If this is new for you and this is different for you and this doesn't usually happen, then this is significant for you. And I realized later that how many people may be walking around with different kinds of cognitive symptoms, but because everybody poo-poos it or says, oh, that happens to me. It's like, well, if Einstein started sounding like everybody else, then suddenly someone would say, something's wrong with Einstein. He's sounding like the rest of us. So our cognitive levels need to be assessed. And now they're doing some of that with all these concussion preseason testings to try to see where people are at even before they're injured. But this is just going to hit, you know, a small population of people who are playing football or sports where there's funding to have that testing done. But it really got scary when I was driving and I got completely lost. And all of a sudden I thought, okay, wait a second. This is what they say when people get Alzheimer's. And I am not having any clue where I am right now. This is a symptom. So I would urge people to pay attention to their symptoms because denial is powerful, and then you question and doubt yourself a lot.
Yes.
And if it's not really extreme and if it's intermittent, it can make it even trickier because you on a day that maybe you were able to get some sleep, your brain might work a little bit better. So on a day that you don't get much sleep and you didn't get much to eat, you are a train wreck.
Yep. Huh.
So I've been rambling on and on, but
I'm not sure
what you want me to go into next.
No. Actually, you're doing perfectly because that's one of the things, you know, that I tell people too. I have an acronym I use on. I have several acronyms I use a lot in the show, but one of them is HALT: hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And any symptoms that I have, whether it affects my memory or emotion regulation, a lot of the different residuals that I was left with, if I have any of those things, any one or combination of those things, it just amplifies the effect of the residual, and you can add to that weather and barometric pressure changes and too much heat or too much cold, things that didn't affect me before, those subtle things you're talking about. You know, I've lived here all my life, so, you know, we get the hot, humid, and the brr, freezing, you never want to be here, you know, both extremes of the weather. And you know, I never loved either extreme. I'm definitely a spring, fall kind of a person, but it wasn't painful like it is now when it's too hot and too cold. Yeah, I just don't even want to, like, go. You know, it never occurred to me before to have to think about, you know, whether or not I wanted to go to this thing or that thing, you know, things that I would normally just, yeah, of course, you know, I'd want to go. Like, you go into a game, of course you'd want to go. But finding myself having to stop and say, is it worth going out in 5 below? Is it worth how I'm going to feel the next couple days?
Oh, yeah.
If I go
into
it. And it's
a I don't know if you have
change.
Come up with, it sounds like somewhat of a formula. Like, what's my, you have to do this calculation formula to for almost anything. What's my reserve? How am I feeling? What's my mood? How noisy is it going to be? How bright is it going to be? How big a crowd? You know, all of those things.
Right.
Am I going to have to stand in line for a long time? Am I going to have to sit for a long time? Are people going to be talking really loudly around me? And I'll be basically trapped there.
Right.
All those things. That's... And then to say, and then there's always the mystery factor, the factor that you didn't think of that day, that then you later go, oh, I didn't think about this happening. And now I'm in the circumstance. And now I think, oh, I need to write this down too, because I used to go and do errands all the time, and I never thought about if I stood in line or if I was near a loud fan or any of those environmental things.
Right.
But you can just
the sensory
feel
overload
the energy.
Seems...
So, yes, exactly. You just feel your energy
seems to hit a lot of us.
Out. Yep. And it's awful. You don't want to hit the wall when you're far away from home, because you can't teleport back. You still
Exactly.
Yeah.
And see, I find this very fruitful, because I can relate to everything that you're saying. That's really
something. I'm sure
something.
Lots of people. And that's the part where you just can't, in the beginning, you just can't believe you're having a problem with it, because you're, you know, you've been a healthy person, or you're a young person, or you tend to say over and over, but I'm not 90. I'm not 90, and this is feeling like what it might be like if I was 90. And I didn't used to feel this way at all. In fact, people used to tell me I look much, much younger for my age, and wow, it's so amazing what I can do. And I guess one of the things that happened too was that people kept saying, you look great. Oh, you look so great. And finally at my support group, the BIA in Massachusetts in Framingham, they have an amazing support group. It's literally called the Amazing Support Group. And I went there and I said, everyone keeps telling me I look great and I feel terrible. And they all in unison said, oh, you have to see the DVD, you look great. I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, yeah, everyone tells you look great. They all told us we look great too. And I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, okay, this is a joke, right? And then they come out, they show me from the lending library, there it is, the DVD, you look great. Or you can see it on YouTube. And I sat down and I started watching it. And at a certain point, I just started to cry, because the guy was talking about things that I didn't know how to describe, and I knew exactly what he was talking about. And that's when it hit me that I really have a problem. I've got a big, big problem that I can't glaze over and just say, oh, this is, you know, I'll be over this in just a little bit. I just have to work harder at it, or I just have to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, and this will just all be behind me. And
exactly.
And going to some of and hearing what some of the other people, I mean, for some folks, I couldn't go to the support groups where there were folks in wheelchairs because I thought, I can't complain. I can walk still. I can't complain about, I don't know when I can play any sports or run or something like that. Who am I? That's terrible. And then I kept saying, there must be groups for athletes. I've got to find some athletes. And, every other day there would be another NFL football player that had committed suicide from his post-concussion syndrome. And I was thinking, we got to, like, rally some folks together here so that these guys see that there's some other solution to their life. And this is serious stuff. And brain-injured folks are much higher incidence of suicide, and also a lot of the medications that we get put on the first few weeks of being on the medications, the incidence of suicide risk is really high. And I can speak to that because that happened to me. And it was very scary. I wasn't one of the people who woke up from their car accident from a coma. I was one of the people who woke up out of a coma into the hospital wondering where I was because I had taken an overdose that was totally not how I would have taken care of my life, but it suddenly seemed like the most clear solution ever, so much so that I didn't even talk to anyone about it. And that's when I realized now how when anyone is in isolation or if there's not many people who are watching them who know them, if there's not a lot of folks who are checking in to see what's happening with their mood, it's very, very easy for people to slip into no man's land. And if someone doesn't really know your personality to say, they're not acting like themselves. There's not really someone there to advocate for that person. That person is not able to advocate for themselves. The brain injury has affected you too much that you aren't the same person. You know, we talk about who were we before the events, who are we now, and what happens along the way, how we're changed by, you personally had, and many other people too, may have had surgeries for either having a subdural hematoma or for fractures or other things that were traumatically related, as opposed to the aneurysm and then them going in to repair the aneurysm. But needless to say, as you were coming through, there were various stages, I'm sure, that as you processed through different parts of the healing, your brain was doing different things, whether or not they were worried about swelling and keeping the edema down and all these other medications that your body still has to process. And some of them are very significant medications, and the situations are dire. But then on the other hand, you just really need to make sure that somebody is watching because it's very, very dangerous. And you can read it on the label and say, and it's like you're not even realizing that you're suicidal. You're just saying, you know what, this isn't working anymore. I have a lot of problems. I don't want to be a burden to anyone. I know what I can do. I can take care of this myself and it'll be no problem anymore. It will be as matter-of-fact as that. And I know this is a really controversial subject, but I feel like it's not spoken about very much. And especially a lot of brain-injured folks have anxiety and depression as part of the injury.
Yes.
And it's really, really significant how it compromises your life, your personality, how other people interact with you. And even once someone knows that you're on an antidepressant, even if they weren't aware of your symptoms, they may start treating you differently.
Absolutely. And I think this is really important. You know, you don't have any way of knowing, but 2 weeks ago I had a regularly scheduled program, but the day before my program, I found out that a friend committed suicide and left.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. We were really close, and I was really in shock and, you know, broken up about it, as you do. And so in the back half of my show that night, I just talked, you know, what I called it was suicide hurts. And so
yeah.
What I want to do now is just briefly go back, and you correct me, because I want to bring, I do feel this is important, and so I want to bring the crowd up to speed. So Catherine first had an athletic injury where she had a concussion, but just realized, you know, didn't go to the hospital, wind up in a coma from that, just got her bell rung, as they say, but started noticing some processing differences and some shifts, but not very long after that was in a very bad collision where she was rear-ended. Now, when you went to the, you drove, so in that particular accident, you weren't, this is another important thing we're hearing more about, you weren't knocked unconscious necessarily.
Nope.
Or for any length of time, because you managed to get your car towed and then drive on to your next destination. So still you're appearing to be fine, except that you had that blow to the head, which you would think, you know, you bang your head really hard on something, or you have, like, I had a car accident once when I was younger, before all of this stuff happened, where my head hit the windshield, and it hit it hard enough that it spidered out, it cracked my windshield, you know.
Yep.
And that was my forehead. No one's ever talked about that, you know.
Yep.
Ever, you know, I just I got out of the car and felt sick, and they said to keep an eye on me, that old thing. And so that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, what Catherine was going through at the time. And then did, I'm assuming then, I just want to fill in a little bit of a blank and then continue on.
Sure.
At that point, though, you were noticing, because it was a multiple infraction on your brain at this point, and so you were having more amplification of your processing techniques, or whatever residuals you'd surmise yourself as having, and so you did get some therapy. Your doctor did suggest. Did he suggest, or is that something that you raised concern and then they suggested that you go get some therapy? But the therapy, it sounds like, didn't really click.
It didn't come for a long time. So what happened was, each time that I would start back to more activity and I would start having more symptoms, then they'd say, okay, you have to back mm-hmm. off again, go back to strict precautions. So when I was getting dizzy and feeling like I was going to throw up in handball practice, they're like, okay, that's too much. You're going to have to back off of that. And so what ended up happening basically was that my anxiety got much, much worse. My sleep became very difficult. I had a lot of insomnia, so I wasn't getting regular sleep, which then causes a lot of issues.
Yep.
And then basically then I was put on a variety of medications that some of them were very, very sedating and over-medicating, sort of turning me into this zombie kind of person. So that
yeah.
for the most part, I was almost just sitting on the sofa. I remember at one point my son was like, Mom, like, you need to, like, get up and do something. And I just barely remember him sort of saying, you've been sitting there all day. And, of course, for some people, that might seem like just a reasonable afternoon. But for me, that wasn't how I was used to living my life at all.
Right.
And he didn't come with me to the appointment to say, my mom's basically a zombie now. I think this medicine's too strong for her. So there were
right.
a number of issues with trying different medications. And then when I went back to see Dr. Cantu, he said, look, at this point, you really need to see a brain injury specialist. And that's where he referred me to Spalding Rehab. So
okay,
when I got
good.
To Spalding
right.
Rehab, then I saw Dr. Che, who's now he's in Washington, D.C., but he's a very reputable brain injury specialist, and he referred me to a neuropsychiatrist, and then he referred me to a cognitive speech pathologist about my memory. And it was the speech pathologist who basically said to me, gosh, it sounds like you would be having vestibular problems. And I sort of said, well, what do you mean? And she goes, well, you know, with the dizziness. And I said, well, I don't really feel dizzy. And I thought of dizziness like that meant you felt like you were going to faint all the time. And I didn't have vertigo, which was spinning. So I just always
said,
I think I'm fine. But I was bumping into the walls, and I was feeling like I was walking on a floating dock. I would get nauseous a lot. And I would trip coming up the stairs where I wouldn't clear completely my right foot. And I just called myself clumsy. And then I realized at one point, wait a second, I never used to bump into walls. I'm a athletic person. I have good depth perception. Something's wrong.
Right.
There's something wrong while I'm tripping up the stairs. And so that's when then they referred me to a neurophysical therapist who did a vestibular evaluation and said, oh, you have vestibular issues.
Now tell us what that is.
Pardon?
Tell us what that is.
Oh, okay. So the vestibular part of your body is using, it's a very complex system that's using different systems. Some feedback comes in through your eyes. You have visual feedback to let yourself, your brain, and you know where your position sense is, if you're sitting upright, if you're leaning, if you're laying down, if you are starting to fall. It gives cues to the brain. So if I was in the dark, I would have a much harder time telling if I was leaning or bumping into something, or if it's dim lighting, I should say. It's not dark, dark, but just dim lighting. That would cut down some of the feedback that my eyes were able to use to keep me in the right position. There's also these things called Golgi tendon bodies in your tendons, in your ankles and so forth, that send messages up to your brain. But after a brain injury, your brain doesn't process things properly. And unfortunately, it and also your inner ear tells you what your balance is doing. So all of these things work together to tell your brain whether you're up or down or falling or whatever. But then Janet Callahan, she's amazing. I called her the concussion queen. She says, but the problem is with a brain injury and concussion is the brain just takes all that new information and kind of throws it into a pot. And I'm like, what? Like, what? And I didn't learn that in PA school. What are you talking about? The brain just suddenly just throws the information around and doesn't do anything with it? And she goes, yeah, basically we have to retrain you. You have to do these exercises that are going to make you feel really nauseous because it's going to desensitize you to let you know that up is up, right is right, left is left. And so I also had this, some people will be familiar with this, called an Epley procedure, where you get these little crystals in the inner ear that are floating around, and they also give sort of bad, interrupted information. And it's a simple procedure this Dr. Epley invented that the physical therapist can teach you how to even do yourself. But it was amazing. After the first time I had it done, I just started crying because I could see more clearly. I wasn't so as nauseous. It was profoundly different. But this, again, was almost 2 years after my injuries. So many, many people can go undiagnosed, or it takes a long time to get in to be seen by the people who will really specialize in this. I'm lucky. I'm in the mecca of Boston with all these specialists, and even so, the wait was really long, or it just takes time, and you have to get your referrals, and you have to jump through the insurance hoops. And but, you know, if someone's, I shouldn't, I'm from Wisconsin, I shouldn't say if someone's in the middle of Iowa, but that's what we used to say. You can't know that someone's going to know, or someone's going to refer you to someone who's going to know. And even the times that I might have had a horrible migraine and I'd be in the ER, I could tell I was with some providers who really didn't know much about brain injury just because of how they treated me.
That's me,
and
I think it is.
And so that's
in Nebraska.
Eventually. Actually, I've been
to
Ogallala, Nebraska. I didn't say that, Ogallala, Nebraska, but and I know that there actually are very good medical centers in Nebraska because I heard neuro PA speak about it. Yeah. So eventually I want
to
educate
that.
A lot.
Not about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it wasn't. Yeah,
no.
It was about
transplant or cancer, blood cancers, you know, they're great at, but not.
Yeah, it was a leukemia.
Still,
yeah.
Not at the brain stuff, just leukemia and transplant. Robert Redford's son came here for a transplant, so we do that real well.
Oh, wow.
But brain isn't one of the things on the list. In fact, I was kind of mentally checklisting what I could remember of it when you were calling neuro physical therapist, neuro, you were putting in front of each of the specialties, and I'm thinking, no, I just saw a plain physical therapist. Did I benefit from that? No, I didn't benefit from that. You know, a couple of the others, I took some of those neuropsych tests, and it was kind of what you were describing, something you said earlier. I can't remember exactly what it was, but she was showing me pictures, and she flipped through like 6 pictures, and then I was supposed to say what was in the first picture, and well, it was a family eating dinner. I remembered that, but she wanted to know, like, I couldn't remember if it was 2 little boys or 2 little girls. I guessed, because again, denial is big. You don't want to feel like you're failing a test, you know, or something, when you should know the answer to that. And so I guessed a boy and girl, safe guess, right? Everything, Dick and Jane, everybody, there's a little boy and a little girl. So I'm guessing mom, pop, I mean, this is a lot of trouble. I'm going to try to cheat this test, right? And was there a tablecloth? What color were the walls? I mean, all of this stuff, they sent me back into the world with what I told them was, like maybe like a family eating dinner. I passed that test. Well, you know, I was going to be going back into a career where I was managing people's money, a lot more detail involved, you know, that could have hurt me badly on a number of levels and clients on a number of levels. And you can't send somebody out who says maybe some people eating dinner, you know, and I've got no idea about anything, what they were wearing, you know, what color mom's hair was dad bald, you know, I mean, nothing like that. And that was the best we got, you know, as far as I know, it still is the best we've got. So when you, and I want to let you go back, you know, to, again, Boston is known. I have a friend in the Chicago Brain Aneurysm Foundation, Janet Sutherland, and she's right there, too, in the Mecca, a very good brain injury awareness and treatment there in your area. So you were, but you were kind of diagnosing yourself, I mean, as you were noticing these problems persist and getting past making excuses when they were amplified enough that they're kind of, you know, tugging on your coat, you know, hey, this is for real. And then so you're going and seeking help and fortunate to get good referrals as you're uncovering these changes in your brain from the injuries. So when you get to the support group part, and you can drop back to therapy if you want, but before I forget, I feel like I've sequenced you from the beginning kind of all the way up to where we are, and then we're going to drop back for a minute to the antidepressant. But as far as the support group thing went, did those specialists that you saw at that time, when did you get turned on to a quote-unquote support group? The process of finding out you needed these therapies and what some of the more permanent residuals would be took a couple of years to process for you and start getting some treatment. But where did the support element come in for you? Because I guess I feel like peer-to-peer support is key and integral in the kit of tools towards a lifetime of recovery that people have. Some of it's going to be the medical, traditional medical profession. Some of it's probably going to be, you know, some holistic, maybe nutrition, yoga, exercise, you know, acupuncture, something like that. But another just as valid portion is going to be peer-to-peer support, and that's what brought me here, actually. And so I'm a big believer in that. And so in your process, then, you're a couple years out, you're having some of these physical symptoms treated. Now, where did the support come in, and where did your depression and anxiety really start escalating? Was it at this couple-year point where you're starting to go in and get therapy and realizing that the things you experienced weren't transient but going to be more of a formidable thing to deal with? So I don't know one you want to hit first or how you want to do that. Support. Let's just start with support for a minute. We'll get support out of the way because we're doing process here of what your treatment plan looked like. Where was support in it?
Yeah, I think that I had been seeing a psychologist, but she didn't have experience with brain injury. And so at a certain point, that's when the light went on for me that I said, you know what, everyone that I need to see has to be someone who's familiar with brain injury. Because I had already lost like a year. It felt like I had lost a year of my life just getting to the point where when basically Dr. Cantu said, you know, I know that you're being treated for depression and anxiety, which can mimic TBI, and a lot of times this happens to people. You basically, people will tell you, oh, well, anxiety and depression can explain a lot of these symptoms, and so we're not really sure if you have TBI. And so then I said, so then I waited to see a neuropsychiatrist, and then he switched. I was off of the other medications that I was having a lot of problems with. And then I was able to luckily see Sally Johnson, who is at Spalding Rehab, and she's a licensed clinical social worker who only deals with brain-injured people. And so that was tremendous for me. And this, I told her, like, I don't know, every other time I saw her, look, you have to get interns in here. We need people who are going to, you know, be able to go out there and do what you do, because you can't see all of us. And there's people, you know, everywhere I go, when I start telling people what I'm dealing with, they tell me of someone that they know or someone in their family or a kid that they went to school with. Or, I mean, everybody had somebody somewhere related, that it made me start going, look, in Boston we've got how many middle schools, how many high schools, how many colleges, how many professional sports, how many people who are in car accidents. I'm like, there's zillions of us out there, and a bunch of them are completely undiagnosed who are having problems. And either people are just saying to them, oh, you're getting old, or, you know, you're pretty anxious, or maybe you're depressed, or and they're not being treated. And the problem is you, at a certain point, you know, you're going to see what you can see, but you can't see what you can't see. So that was when I just finally kind of made this new rule that if I was going to see somebody, they needed to know what the heck a brain injury was or a concussion was. And at one point I saw a neurologist who, he didn't believe in concussions, and so I basically said, but so tomorrow I can go back and play handball again? And he was quiet. But it was awful. And I thought, how many people go see someone and tell them they don't have any problems? But yet they go home and their life is completely dysfunctional. They can't work. My anxiety and depression skyrocketed after just a month and a half or 2 months, because all of a sudden I said, what am I going to do for work? I can't function. I have to support myself and my son. What am I going to do? So my anxiety and depression skyrocketed from the beginning of thinking, how am I going to manage this economically? My mom came and we packed up. I left the apartment. We put stuff in storage. My son went to live with somebody from friends so he could stay in his high school. I went to live with my parents for a period of time. In the last 4 years, I've lived in 15 places. So when people talk about their lives getting turned upside down and having difficulties finding housing and rebuilding, they're not joking. We do not have a society that's built with big backup plans. And so now I walk around telling everybody, forget that 6 months of extra savings account. Make sure you have a year if you can. You just can't count on everybody else. You can't count on all the systems to be there when you need them. You can fall through a lot of different cracks. And it makes you sound like you're Chicken Little, and it's horrible. But once I would have never believed it if someone had told me. I would have been like, yeah, right, well, that would never happen to me. And, you know, I kept telling people I was a medical person, and I'm having a hard time navigating getting evaluated and figuring out what's wrong with me, and then whether or not I supposedly do have a brain injury, or whether or not everyone just wants to say I have anxiety and depression. But then I'm like, how can you put all of these other cognitive issues, all of these other vestibular issues, how do you put all of those together? You can't.
And that's what I think really stinks the most. They take you at a time where your mental clarity stinks, and you have to process stuff that's harder dealing with the government. No wonder, I mean, and any of those resources you're talking about, it all takes time. Time when you're in a fog, that is extra cruel. Because on your best cognitive day, you know, you could figure those things out. Like if you were doing it for your mother or something, you know, it might be hard, but you'd know what to do and what direction to take. But when you're clueless, like when you were using the example of your son talking to you about being on the couch, you know, I know that I wasn't accountable, and a lot of my things took a lot longer to get to because I lived alone. So, I faked what I could in public, and then when I was home alone, people didn't know.
Right.
And I didn't tell.
Right.
I didn't want to tell.
Right.
You know,
right.
And when I did and went to a couple of the non-neuro in front professionals we have, you know, they wanted to, I use it here tongue in cheek. Finally, if you come from the right place, you get relegated to the shrink boneyard, and that's where they start pelting those pills at you. So we'll go back to the pills, but I'm sorry, did I let you even say the support group? Did they make you aware there was a support group, or did you do that on your own too?
No, so Sally had really encouraged me a lot to come to. There's a group called Babis that's run through Spalding, and then also the local BIA groups. What got to be tricky for me was then I wasn't able to drive, and then it was harder for me to get around, and also because of my vestibular symptoms, being on the train and the bus was a problem. So, or just my energy level to be able to, I was ready to go home after I would just get to the train station. So that's the other thing that's really, I think that what you're doing is brilliant, because people can be in the safety of their home without being out driving or getting emotionally and physically depleted just through the transportation to get to the access of support. And I would find that often many of the people who are in the support groups were 5-10 years out from their injuries. There rarely were people who were in their first year. At the support group that I went to in my community, because people needed too much help to get there. Or just being in the meeting, having multiple people talking, having people moving around in the room, that just was way too overstim, and would be exhausted. People would go home from the meetings and sleep for 3 hours. But at least you would hear from people that that's what was happening, so you'd think, oh, this is normal. Which, of course, before, if you'd ever thought of that, you'd be like, oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? You go to a support group, you should be invigorated by the situation, not have to go home and sleep. But yeah, the poop, exactly. I mean, I'll tell you, that's where a lot of people have really said that they've been able to maintain their sanity, because they knew that people believed them 100%. They knew what they had been through. They could just say, you know, I don't feel like talking today, and someone would give them a hug, and that was what they needed. There were some times where I thought, I knew I was a medical provider. I knew my medical providers weren't allowed to give me a hug or to tell me things were going to be okay. But I'll tell you, I would have given a zillion dollars some of those days for someone to say to me, you're going to be okay. Because I was so scared. I was petrified. And I didn't feel like anyone understood why I was so scared. It all looked, you know, pretty easy. Or because compared to the other patients they were seeing, you know, I was a good one. I was not a good one, but I was a more functioning one.
Yes.
But my life was very dysfunctional. They'd say, oh, you're highly functional TBI. And I'm like, well, you know, this really is not my idea of functioning. And I am nowhere near where I would like to be. So can we, like, get me into some kind of super accelerated program? Because this isn't working. I'm feeling pretty bummed about what I'm able to do.
Right.
But, of course, it's because you're comparing to what you did before.
Well, exactly. And that's what I said about going. By the time you finally, you know, have gone through that long enough and you get relegated to the shrink boneyard, you are half crazy. But that wasn't the what everything stemmed from to begin with.
Right.
You know, it was
exactly.
An undiagnosed brain injury that you didn't have the skills to cope with and were clueless about what was going on and desperate, which brings on the fear for me, because there isn't anybody that can validate you. And that was what I said about, you know, in 95, we didn't have a support group in my town, and we still don't. And there's about 1 million people. So that somebody to identify, I also say tongue in cheek, it took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to meet my first survivors. And in the last year, you know, I've met hundreds of survivors, and for the first time, not felt like it was about crazy. And because I got tired of explaining things to people, you know, half
like,
don't believe you, or they can't
you
relate
were in another
to
universe.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
suddenly
made
you're
me
not
tired.
A human being anymore.
Yeah,
it's awful.
It's
a unique kind of isolation, because you start to try to protect yourself.
Yes.
And so you make your circle incredibly small for survival mechanism. So that you, I mean, on the good side, you stay away from as many negative people as you can. But inevitably, they're going to come into your path. People who don't understand, and the fallout from TBI of the people who get it, people who are willing to get it, people who don't get it, but they still love you no matter what. I learned that about elephants, that when an injured elephant is in its herd, the elephants that are healthy will come and literally physically hold it up, like all lean together, so it's sort of in the middle, so that the tigers that are circling around the outside or the lions won't see that one's going to go down, and they can easily drag it into the jungle. And I said, you never are going to know who your elephants are going to be with these situations,
right.
Which was another whole trauma, because
you
would think you would know who would stand by you and who would disappear, and it was like shocking. I talked, there was a woman who had a stroke, and she said, I just couldn't get over which friends fell away and couldn't handle me having a stroke. She said, that was more painful for me to try to accept than the fact that I had the stroke.
Yes.
And that's
why
whole,
I quit
that's
telling.
That's a whole other piece. Yeah.
It is. When you look normal, you can not, you know, you can not explain, so you don't have to keep seeing those looks. you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was easier in some regards, more detrimental to be completely isolated and do what I was doing, but at the same time, I wasn't allowing myself to be vulnerable or putting myself out there either. When I quit talking, and so what you said about making the circle smaller, you know, when you feel threatened, you try, you get desperate enough that you want to communicate it so someone can validate you and give you that hug. But if you don't trust that that's going to happen, you have no reason to trust that that's going to happen. Then you stop trying, which then go back to. I think we caught everybody up to the physical process of your brain injuries, but then at a point, as you say, many of us go through depression and anxiety. Part of that for me, you know, was guilt, because I'd see people with so much, you know, they had it so much worse than me.
Yep.
You know, in spiritual healing kind of times, you know, I feel gratitude that this is all I had. But compared to my old functioning, you know, then there's that element of shame and, you know, shame and what right do I have to feel this way, but still having some kind of survivor guilt, but also just sadness, anger, and confusion about the gear shifts you're going to have to go through to locate. I mean, that old joke the hippies used to say about going out and finding myself, you know, if you ever had found yourself in the first place, you lost it, dang it, and can't find the drawer, you know. What drawer is the new one going to be in, for God's sake, you know? Does anyone want to give me a pointer here?
You know? Well, yeah, but actually, there was a profound moment for me when I met with someone who was helping me with some cognitive behavioral therapy, and he looked at me and he goes, you know, you may have really liked who you were. You may have liked her a lot. You might really miss her a lot. But now you just have to decide who you're going to be now. And and just the tears that came down my face when he was like, you might miss her a lot, I was like, oh, my God, I want her back so badly, I can't even tell you. I had no idea I was so attached to her.
Me either.
And you can't imagine when you feel like you're a stranger in your own body. Your body's, like, betraying you. Your brain is betraying you. You don't know who you are, let alone, you know, to say, what am I becoming into? And then depending on, you know, what's happening with medications and side effects and blah, 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 and just the regular from the brain being manipulated, the irritability of the brain in and of itself. You don't recognize yourself, how you handle things, and you're like, ew, who is this person? I'm not like that. And then you realize, I guess I am, because I can't control it. And it's completely foreign to me. But, yeah, there's that side of you that's like, come on, buck up. You know, like, you don't have it so bad. Mm-hmm. Just come on now. Turn your cheek and hit the road and come on now. Let's just put on your happy face and get out there.
And you've got all those people to validate that, those people from you look great, right? You know, you're going to go out and do that, and they're all going to validate that because you look great, and, gee, nobody else thinks you have it as bad as you could have had it either, you know, or the guy over there they might be looking at. And so, you know, it's invisible to them, and, you know, and you can't communicate it.
I used to just think they just better hope that they don't ever have 24 hours in my shoes because they'll be eating those words real fast.
Exactly. So now I want to drop back, and then I know I'm going to, audience, I will open the lines in just a couple minutes, 424-243-9540. Please feel free to call in and make any questions or comments to Catherine. And we're going to talk a little bit about your book in a minute. I want to do that, but I wanted to go back just to the point then, you know, you brought up emotional changes we can have after brain injury that include depression and anxiety, and the medication and what happened to you, you don't feel like it was a conscious thought, or do you, that none of your treatment plans were going to presto you back into the old you? You, the drug, without you even really having a focused intent, caused you to want to stop trying?
At that point, basically, I had the very typical symptoms of a severe depression. I had lost appetite. My energy was completely drained. I didn't even want to watch a handball game, which is not like me. I'm, like, addicted to the sport. So nothing was bringing me joy. I wasn't obviously even cognizant. I mean, my son is the most significant aspect of my entire life, and I wasn't even able to hold in my mind that what was I doing, how was this going to impact him. So it was as if there was just this bizarre, and this is what all I can imagine, because this has been seen repeatedly, such that the FDA requires that they put it on the label, that within the first, it was 4 days after I had started a new medication, and within the first 2 weeks, people are much more likely to be suicidal, and they're supposed to talk to their doctor. And of course, everyone's always been asking me, do you feel suicidal? You know, well, and I would say, I can't live like this. I need a better quality of life. But I wasn't making plans. I wasn't in that mode. But that's where I realize now. And even the number of times I might have had to have said to a patient in the past, all the safety precautions of running through that suicide conversation, that it was as if it just was as clear as day. That was just the thing to do, and it didn't even occur to me to call my doctor. And I completely had a plan. I mean, I drove way away from my home. I drove off of road into a backfield that if someone had not called the police, I wouldn't be here, because they said, there's a car in that field that it's not usually there. And literally two friends of mine who live on the other side of the world called each other and said, Catherine died. And if those guys hadn't come and resuscitated me, I wouldn't be here. So I believe this concept now that people are more suicidal when they start a new antidepressant. And that's not a casual side effect. That's a very, very serious side effect. And
would you say now, after your experience, that you would not take them, or you just need to be monitored, make sure you're monitored, because you can't trust your judgment, perhaps, during that first
I would, yes. I need to be on an antidepressant because my brain doesn't function very well without it now, and I guess this is very common for a lot of TBI people. I tried time without it and basically just crashed.
Right.
But I would definitely recommend that people tell whoever they trust that they've been started on a new medication, and to please keep an eye on them and just check in with them. It's hard because our society is very, very quiet about these conversations, it's very serious, and you don't want to get thrown into a psych ward, and a psych ward is one of the worst places for a brain injured person. I will tell you that.
Sounds like we got
a
lot.
That's a whole nother show. That's a whole nother show.
Yeah, me too.
But
okay,
I would advise people that they just need to be very, very careful, and that if they just put themselves in the most loving, nurturing environment they possibly can, if they're starting on some new medication, so that people are watching out for them, who are going to really advocate for them and make sure they stay safe. Because I would not have ever thought that I would be telling the story. And it was horrible for my son. Horrible.
I'm sure it was.
They weren't sure where I was. They weren't sure where I was for a few days.
A few days.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Wow.
So, anyway, I don't want to belanger that. That's, but just people.
No.
And I think that's the bottom line is people really need a lot of support, a lot of understanding, people who aren't going to judge them, that our brains are doing these weird things and it's not something that we're in charge of.
Right.
And it's when people say personality changes, they're not kidding. That how someone, and that's another reason why someone needs to go in when they see the neuropsychiatrist or the neurosurgeon or whoever to say, you know what, she's been acting a little different, or can I talk to you separately and let you know some things I've been observing? Because I'm sure if my son had been interviewed, some of it they probably would have said, oh, he's just a teenager, but some of them they probably would have said, oh, that's weird. We should pay attention to that. That's not who she is or how she behaves, and so that's a symptom.
Right. I didn't have anybody like that. Still don't really do. You know, my parents might still be able to, but my husband wasn't around when that happened. There really isn't a lot of people that can do that. So I think that's a good point that you bring up. Now, at some point down the road, then, you decided that you needed an additional, or that you wanted an additional tool of recovery that wasn't yet available, at least not something that you had run into, and you decided to write Tell Me This. I want to share a couple. There's a bunch of them that I like in here, but tell a little bit about when I first heard tip cards. When I was on the Latch Publishing site, I didn't know exactly what that was, and they had a lot of different small books, different things that I hadn't seen before, but explain the concept behind this publication, and I support the reason why you've done it now that I have it in my hand, and I've used it, you know, I've used it today, and part of late afternoon yesterday. So I get exactly where you were coming from, but tell us how you came to do this and a little about what it is.
Okay. Well, I've always been a big reader, and I moved around a lot when I was a kid. So reading and books has always been, whenever I was new in town, I always had a book no matter what, or so I requested a ton of books from the library about inspiration, about rebuilding your life, about starting over, about anything I could find that might not be very complicated, because I couldn't really focus for very long, and I couldn't handle any big philosophies because I just couldn't process it. I needed something that was quick. At one point I said, I just like need like little Zen things. I said, has someone made some little Zen thing that I can just put in my purse and it's going to be, or in my pocket? And I went to a lot of appointments by myself. I spent a lot of time alone. And I just needed a touchstone, something that if I started being there with my mind too much, I would get in trouble. And the fear would just feed on itself, and I would just be very frightened. And normally I'm not a frightened person. Obviously I would have never been a goalie.
yeah, right.
So, and then one day I said, okay, I really need to have something that I read in the morning and something that I read at the end of the day. And I had looked at some things. I'm not a particularly religious person. So I had seen some different things that were inspirational, but they just didn't quite hit the core of my experience. And so I could feel like, well, this kind of helps, but this isn't really exactly what I need to hear. And so I wrote those two things, and then somehow one day I just said, you know what, I really wish someone would tell me this. And I just started writing stuff down. You know, I was like, I wish they would tell me that I was going to be okay. I wish they'd tell me they're just as scared as I am and they don't know the answer. I wish that they would tell me, yeah, you feel like you're working really hard because you are. And they constantly told me about being patient. And, you know, medical providers, first of all, are not patient people. To be patients, and then everybody
right.
knows that. And then athletes, mm-hmm. you know, you're conditioned to just keep going and push through it and, you know, spin deal and whatever. And then one day, so I was like, they're constantly telling me, all the doctors, you have to be more patient. And I said, look, the pharmaceutical companies need to start making some patience pills, because this just telling me that I'm supposed to be patient automatically is not going to work. I saw this cartoon. I saw this cartoon. I was like, I don't need a whole bunch of zombie drugs. Just feed me patience. There was this cartoon of this buzzard, and he's sitting over on a branch over a highway, and he says, patience, my, you know, I don't know what we can say on the radio, but patience, my whatever, I'm gonna kill something. And I just laughed so hard I started crying, because I was like, yeah, you mean, are you kidding me? I have to sit around here until something dies so I can have a meal? Like, forget about it. Like, let's get with the program, folks.
Right.
You know, let's just get my brain fixed and let's just get on with the road and the story and what's next in chapter X, Y, and Z. And then I realized, you know, there is no great perfect answer. And so I just started writing down different things. And then I was like, you know, and some of it came from things that people had somewhat told me. Like one of my, the neuro PT was like, I want you to count. When you start stressing, I want you to start counting. I don't care what you count in. And I looked at her and I said, I better count in French backwards, because I'm going to have to really concentrate on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're spiraling, your brain just goes off in 9 directions. And you really have to settle down and go, okay, and count again. And people would say, well, just meditate. And I said, but my mind is really busy. I'd say, yeah, okay, well, I can practice that. I'll practice sitting with my mind. And then I said, I just need to read some very short things, and kind of like having all my teammates with me or my coaches with me, people who believed in me. And then I wrote about some stuff that, you know, I really thought, gosh, am I the only person who feels like, I just feel like a racehorse at the gate, and I'm just waiting and waiting, and they're finally going to let me open the gate and just run from this thing. And that was why I said, please find a photo of horses at the gate, because there's so many times I feel this inner pressure. I just want to go. I want to do the things I used to do. I want to be the person I used to be. I loved accomplishing things and getting things done, and I loved stopping penalty shots and all those things. I just want to go, go, go. And no one really sort of said, yeah, I get that you feel trapped, because I'm not in a wheelchair. I'm not on crutches. But that's how it felt. And
right.
So, and then I just wanted also space at the end. It's really important to me that people use this for themselves, that they put cartoons in it or doodles in it or put whatever devotional things are inspiring to them. I wanted the space at the back so that they can
mm-hmm.
write down what's important to them and what's going to be meaningful and what you need to hear, because we each are our own person. And something that someone says to us can be really magical and really right on target and really make your heart melt. And you think, oh, I have to remember that. And I'm not sure what's going to make that for everybody. But people know. You know yourself
right.
what you need to hear. You know yourself if maybe some saying that your grandmother used to say to you when you are having a bad day or whatever. And
right.
so I want it to be something that is a, more like a workbook almost, but that it's really portable. And I'm just
that's
a
what I like
person.
About it. Yeah, this is the size of something a guy could put in their back pocket or a girl could put in their purse, and it's just affirmative in so many ways. Again, it's called Tell Me This, Encouragement and Hope After Brain Injury by Katz, that's C-A-T-Z, LeBlanc, L-E-B-L-A-N-C, and you can find this at Lash Publishing. If you're Googling, that's iLash, L-A-S-H, Publishing, or their website is lapublishing.com. But a couple things here. You were just talking about patience, and I happen to like this one. Most people don't understand. We don't understand ourselves sometimes. This is challenging for us. Who are we now? Everyone talks of patience. I liked that. I liked the picture you put underneath it, too. That was really cool. And then I liked, you are not alone. Even though we can be very isolated, there are others just like us all over the world. We are connected by our experiences and our vulnerability, our competitiveness and love of achievement, our injured brains and broken hearts. I thought that was very powerful. Mm-hmm. It resonated with me. But I also like, bask in what makes you happy, makes you smile, makes you laugh, to remember that we do have a choice in a lot of things in our recovery. You know, we can fold like a house of cards and, you know, quit something that's difficult and re-challenging, you know. It's not like you reach a plateau and then it's a bed of roses anywhere in life after a challenging time.
And I think that's one of the things that tremendous self-care, I think, it's not natural for a lot of us, especially the people who used to just going and doing whatever they wanted prior to their injury. So this idea of really kind of babying yourself or doing these really nurturing things for you, it's not optional. At this point, the challenges that you're having from your injury, if having a fresh flower near your bed every day makes you feel good, figure out if there's a way that you can get that or have that. Or if someone says to you, oh, gosh, you know, what can I do for you? Say, bring me a fresh flower once a week. And that's why I have a little section about make a list of things for people to do, because all these people will say things, but sometimes you're not sure do they really mean it or not. And then sometimes it's just you're too tired to tell them what or to ask, to be vulnerable to ask. But sometimes having these things to improve the moment, if you know that a television program, some quirky character is going to make you laugh or even make you smile, or even if you don't get the smile out, it's going to lift your mood just a tiny bit. It's worth it. Do that. And the doctors can't do that. And all of that is medicine. They do know all those happy endorphins in our brains, if we get them naturally, they do make us feel better. All those neuroscientists are proving all that stuff every day now.
Right. Well, our host last night, Les Paul, was talking about things you can do to beat the holiday blues. And, you know, I was thinking when I read that, your piece, Bask in What Makes You Happy, you know, one of the tools, and he was talking about tools last night, but one of them I used yesterday because I was feeling less than festive. And it's right now ugly. There isn't any powdery snow. There's some dirty leftover snow. The trees are bald. It's colder than, and it's gray. And so it's hard to, you know, feel motivated in the way that I do in the spring when I go out and photograph. That's photography is the thing that does that for me. Well, anyway, I wound up going to a local nursery that, man, oh, man, they had a room of powdered Christmas trees with red cardinals in them and some really cool ornaments and then poinsettias in every variety. And I took my camera and was there for a couple hours just taking pictures, and that made me smile. You know, that made me laugh, and that's something that makes me happy. And so in answer to my Skype was broken last night, so I didn't get on Les's line, but anybody who's friends of mine on Facebook will see that that was one of my tools to beat the holiday blues, or to do something therapeutic like Katz is talking about here, bask in what makes you happy. You know when you need to disconnect and go and do something for you. I'm all for dedicating, being dedicated to a life of service, because service is very rewarding back to us. But sometimes, we just need to disconnect when the circuits start to overload and break away, just break away and do what you say here in the quip. And then this is the answer. I talk about what I describe. You were talking about descriptors earlier, and I've got my full basket syndrome is one of them, I call it, and sensory overload. But this one's for full basket. You think you know what you have to do. Look again. Some things can wait for tomorrow or even longer. I laughed when I saw that. So, that's not the put off till tomorrow what you can do today. It's just that if you have an unreasonable expectation or something that's causing so much stress and pressure on you, my quip back to that would be, is this the hill you want to die on? Is it really worth it?
Yep.
Absolutely. Is this really that important? It was when I put it on the list, but it's breaking my, right now. And can I let this go? Yeah.
Yep. And then just
sure
also
can.
When you feel how much relief you get from saying, I really don't have to do, am I going to starve today if I don't go to the grocery store? Nope, I do have 2 eggs and some toast and an apple. I'll be okay. I don't have to go today. And if it means that I'm going to be getting a migraine because I went today, I'm not better off just because I crossed it off my list. And
right.
I think that the TBI can be a merciless trainer, because if you don't get the message, it'll just keep coming till you get it. And
gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it sure does. And especially if you were super stubborn and you thought you could handle a lot of stuff, man, it will make you humble. And like you said before,
you'll
be more grateful for things that you may have never even noticed before.
Right.
And so there are some things that are the new perspectives, the different, the fact that now we are living a different life. We are different people. We couldn't ever go back after the experience and the wisdom that we've gained. It's changed us.
Right.
So what I want everyone to really hopefully hold in their heart is that they can do this. They are doing this. And in each of those moments when it feels really, really tough, I hope that it doesn't have to be this book that I wrote. Write yourself your own book. Write yourself down what you need to know, because you are an amazing person and you've been dealt a heck of a bunch of cards, but you're hanging in there. And as much as people say it can take a long time, but then when you start really looking back, like when I started thinking about the program and really thought about my days a few years ago and how my days are different, they are different. I'm still not where I want to be, but I'm not in that place either.
Right.
And so I hope that people will really... really give themselves full permission to get what they need to get. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
And I strongly recommend both what you said. This book, Tell Me This by Katz LeBlanc, is very reasonably priced. And if you were to do hers and use it as a template to make your own personal, there's things like I read in here, we'll call them quotes for the sake of whatever descriptors right now, but there's also lists in here and fill in the blanks and things that get you to thinking. So there, like she was saying, there's a little workbook aspect of it in the back, and there are things that you'll continually want to remind yourself of. And it is like, you know, if you're familiar with the writing books and stuff, kind of like a chapbook kind of a thing, a small book of encouragement and hope after brain injury of the elements of recovery that you're going to carry with you for some time into the rest of your life, and you're going to be your own reminder. And what I liked about this particularly too is, you know, if you don't have a physical peer-to-peer support group around, and, you know, this is a wonderful place. Obviously, I think Brain Injury Radio is the way to go for all the reasons we talked about earlier as far as peer-to-peer support. But when you need something, we also have the peer support line, but we are getting more resources like this Book of Catherine's where you can actually have on you something to refer to that's very personal, that's going to be a positive trigger for your psyche at a time that it's wavering a little, and we all have that. So, Catherine, I want to thank you so much for sharing tonight. If anybody has any questions or comments for Cats, the number is 424-243-9540, and press 1 so that we know that you have a question or comment for her. And we do have a couple. So, Catherine, I know that I've talked to you longer than I promised, but you've just been a wonderful guest. I love what you've done, and I can relate to so much of what you have to say, and it's just been a real pleasure hosting you tonight. And with that, I will open up. We'll just do it right down the line, you guys. Area code 202, this might be Allie. If it is, Allie, this is
Allie. Hi, Kat, and hi, Kim, and the listening audience. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I am so encouraged by it. And just like Kim was saying, this is Allie, by the way, and I'm a multiple traumatic brain injury survivor, 6 times over, the last of which was from a motor vehicle accident where I almost went through the windshield. But all of my injuries were frontal lobe, and I could relate to every single thing you talked about from a symptomatic standpoint, with the exception of the vestibular issues. But other than that, it's just really refreshing to hear someone articulate that which I haven't even found the words to articulate. And having the ability to draw on your knowledge base and your findings and insights, because very often, like, for example, right now, my brain is so fatigued, it hurts. And so I need to go to bed. I'll be going to bed as soon as we get off the line tonight. But it's difficult to access my files when my brain is so fatigued. And so during such moments, especially when there's a need to interact with clinical professionals or whatever the case may be, or when I'm self-advocating and or researching resources for myself, it's a wonderful resource to have where we can make this information available to us where we're not having to recreate the experience. So I want to thank you for sharing your story and your wisdom with us. I'm glad you were on tonight.
Well, I'm really sorry that you are in the club. And I would describe to people what you're saying. I said, I have a brain freeze and a brain ache. And they'd be like, what? And I said, well, you know, if you drink a Slurpee really fast and you get a headache and the front of your head is like really hurting and you want it to be warmed up really fast, I said, that's what it feels like. My brain is cramping. And I'm too tired and I got to sleep. And then I hope that when I lay my head on the pillow that my brain is going to let myself turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Sleep will come.
That's
so
huge. Mm-hmm.
I wish you the best. And maybe we'll come up with our own dictionary someday and we'll have all these descriptors so it won't be so unusual and everyone will know what we're talking about.
That might
exactly.
be a good
and
contest
really...
to have or something. Mm-hmm. Have people do that. That might be a good idea. Allie will start a spearhead of project
a glossary
group.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
And Kat, also I wanted to mention that I especially like the format that you chose to write your book in, where it gives us an opportunity to create our own entries and to brainstorm ideas and to arrive at our own insights and findings and come up with our own creative wisdom, whereby we can truly own that in addition to being supported by your words and your findings and your experience. And that's a refreshing and a unique approach. I'm sure they're out there, but in terms of where I am in the here and now today, I don't have access to, don't know about any type of brain injury workbook where we can do that. And so I'm looking forward to getting a copy of your book and using it as a trusty guide for myself and a way to also capture information.
Awesome. Well, I think that that we've, by the experiences we've gone through, we've had our backs against the wall to learn a lot about ourselves. I used to tell people, if you want to learn a lot about yourself, travel to a foreign country. Now I'm like, if you want to learn a lot of about yourself, get a TBI. That's the PhD advanced course for learning about yourself. I feel like we should all be getting honorary PhDs for the work that we're putting in. So just acknowledge yourself and all the wisdom that you have, because it's in there, and I'm glad that you'll have a space to pour it all out and help yourself. And what you'll end up doing is you'll end up meeting somebody somewhere, and then you'll help them too, because they'll be so happy that someone else knows what they're talking about.
Exactly, exactly. We've got one more caller, and then I'll let you get on with the evening. Area code 803, is this our gentleman, southern gentleman?
It is, Les Paul. How are you doing tonight, ladies? And it's been a wonderful show hearing both of you talk. My name's Les Paul Morgan. I'm a host also. But it's just, you've got an amazing amount of knowledge. I've been pushing myself to the limit the past several days, trying to get ready for Christmas parties where I work, all kind of, my office where I actually work. I'm a brain injury survivor that works, and we're having a grand opening tomorrow, so everything I've done has been pushed to the limit, and I've felt like, oh my goodness, my brain's going to pop out of my head, but I don't have a headache or anything. It's just like too much information today, but after I stopped, it's like, wow, I actually have energy. I'm amazed. I'm usually worn out and wanting to go to bed and cover up my head and say, okay, cruel world, tomorrow's another day. And you just had so many different things to talk about. I don't even know where to start. I just want to thank you for coming on and talking about so many wonderful things. And I did miss part of the show. I was driving in my car and had it on speakerphone listening to it for at least 30 minutes. Wow, and Kim, you do wonderful. She does wonderful. We're brain injury survivors, and we have been through the battlefield called Earth and through a war is what I want to say, and yet we're still alive. And I hear two magnificent ladies, and I heard Allie talking, and I think that's part of where the society doesn't understand people with brain injury. We can talk often very clearly and sometimes elegantly, and use big words, and people saying, there's nothing wrong with that guy, that lady, that woman, whoever. And if something gets lost because they don't understand, we don't look wounded always, so therefore it's not. Have you had that experience?
Oh, yes. You should have seen the postal employee when I spent about 5 minutes trying to get him to explain how I fill out the change of address form. And I kept saying, but I don't understand this part. And he kept looking at me like, lady, what is your problem? And I remember I almost said out loud, look, mister, I'm not stupid. I just have had some concussions. And it was like, and he just kept telling me the same thing. He didn't change how he was telling me how I needed to fill out the form. And
And I remember once I learned about auditory processing issues, where when it's an auditory processing, you need to say the same thing multiple times so that it gets through by the third time. But with the way he was explaining, I didn't have an auditory processing problem. I had a cognitive problem. The way he was explaining,
yes.
I didn't get it. Try another way, or start filling
exactly.
out the form for me, and then I'll get it. But I felt like I was in worse than kindergarten, and the teacher was, like, practically spitting on me, saying, what
exactly.
is your problem?
Yeah.
And I was like, you have no idea how humbling this is for me to be asking you for help to fill out a change of address form. But I need help, and I need to change my address. And so, yes, and of course, at that moment, he would have testified, I had a problem.
I feel like we've been in the
same
boat
before. If I was just standing
in
line, they thought I was fine, yeah.
And like you and her both sound so eloquent, and I can pull it off so well sometimes. And I'll do several things, and people say, man, you don't have a problem. And then I say, what'd you say? And I didn't remember anything they were talking about for the past 15 minutes. No, the report you were talking about last fall, what report?
I do want to give a disclosure about what I did today to make sure I could be able to function tonight. I didn't leave
okay.
my apartment. I ate very simple meals. I took a 3-hour nap
wow.
this afternoon. I played with my kitten, and I took a shower.
So you prepared yourself for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I almost, there's some books at the library that came in that I really, really want, and I almost went out, and then I said, but you have to be on tonight, and 10 o'clock is when your alarm goes off to tell you to start getting ready to go to bed. So you
mm-hmm.
better not go anywhere.
Right.
And
right.
sometimes
and
I don't like having to listen to that 4-year-old.
Right.
You've
right.
been a wonderful
well,
guest. Thank you for coming on her show. It's awesome.
Well, I'm
yeah,
glad.
Thanks.
It's inspiring to know that there are folks who are able to be gainfully employed, and I wish you all the luck with all of your parties, and I hope you're able to enjoy them without any repercussions.
Well, tomorrow's probably going to be a hard day because we're having it's a grand opening. It's really a reopening of our office. Our office moved 0.2 miles down the street, and we're getting people familiar with it. And it's an independent living center for people with disabilities. And I work
oh,
there
mm-hmm.
as a brain injury survivor and run 2 support groups from it.
Wow.
And they had me today go all over the community and pass out flyers and
oh,
talk with
gosh.
The news media. And I'm thinking,
oh,
wow.
my gosh.
And so I was gone all day today doing that kind of thing. But the cool thing is that I can say I did it and not brag about it, but just say I can
no,
check
it's an
that
accomplishment.
Office. I accomplished
yeah.
something.
That, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
You have to plan some power rest tomorrow and bring your earplugs and your sunglasses and all that.
Well,
yeah.
the one thing
and
I did is
buddy.
I left my laptop computer at work. That's how tired I was. It's my personal
oh,
computer.
Oh, my.
yeah. We become
well,
fanatic about our list. I went somewhere
yeah.
the other day, and I brought a fancy purse. And that fancy purse did not have a pair of earplugs in it. And boy, oh boy, was I upset about that. And I thought, you got to go right now when you get home and put a pair of earplugs in every single purse you own and every coat pocket, because I'm in trouble if I don't have my earplugs when I leave the house.
Okay. Yeah.
yeah.
So do what you need to do to advocate for you, and congratulations on all that you do for everybody else. But don't forget you too.
That's right. That's what I keep telling him all the time. It's got to take care of ourselves. But Kat, I know that I kept you. I always I'm pretty notorious for telling my guests an hour, and when we're hitting the second hour, I'm finally ready to. turn you loose, so I apologize for that, but take it
no,
as a
that's
high
fine.
Compliment as
much.
With my other guests. We've really enjoyed having you here tonight, and hope you have a great holiday season, a Merry Christmas. Thank you so much again. Her book, I typed it in the chat, but for those of you listening out there in Radio Land, Tell Me This by Katz C.
C-A-T-Z LeBlanc, L-E-B-L-A-N-C. And you can find her at Lash Publishing. That's lapublishing.com. And thank you so much for being here tonight.
Well, thank you very much, too. And good luck to everybody. Stay awesome. Stay groovy.
All right. Peace out.
All right. Good night, Nebraska, okay, and the rest of the world. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night. For everybody else on the line now, and also, Cats, if she does want to stick around and listen in the background, I'll be opening up your mics just shortly. But I thought what I would do is take a moment. I want to thank our guest, Cats LeBlanc. This is Kim Justice, your Wednesday night host of Brain Injury Radio. And now we're going to go into some overtime and independent musicians. Let's try to enunciate. Also going to break out a couple Christmas carols. It's like Wednesday. Can you believe Christmas is Wednesday, next Wednesday, for Pete's sake? Seems like the whole season, like Les Paul, I think he was the one saying that it seemed like it really just kind of snuck up on us this year, and just got really, really hectic. It seems like I'm usually playing Christmas carols for weeks by this time, and I think I played one last week or something, and it's Christmas already, so I'll have plenty of new material for the holidays to play on next Wednesday, Christmas night, if you choose to join in. And I'm going to play some of that in a while, but one thing I thought we'd do is a lot of you here know John Cruz. He was one of the first independent musicians that I managed to get to let me play some of his old music that when I had met him 20 years before I had loved, you know, his compelling story from earlier in his life and the fact that he's battling a tumor on his brain stem as we speak. Still a very talented musician. I've played you guys some of his regular songs that I love, but I got a couple of new ones, and I'm going to play you one of those tonight, and it was the name of his second CD during that decade and a half that we lost track of each other. But this is John Cruz Blues, and pretty soon, Brain Injury Radio, a couple of us got together and are going to help him out. He's one of the only artists I have in the stable that doesn't have a website or a place where you can buy his music. He's simply been letting us play it, and there's going to be a way that you'll be able to buy these tunes in not too distant future, and that is like kind of a answer to a make-a-wish kind of thing for somebody, a fellow brain injury survivor, as well as a bonus for all of us who really love his music and have wanted the opportunity to buy it, help out a little bit. The medical bills are killing him. But this is called King of Broken Hearts by John Cruz.
Seem like forever.
it's a broken house I refuse to see. But now the tide has turned, with a lesson to be learned. And now the broken heart is me. Well, I got these blues real low down. I guess it's time to claim my crown. What I've been searching for, I've already found.
Doggone it. Thank you. I said that was John. I said, oh boy, I hate it when I mute my mic and forget. That was John Cruz. Ha ha ha. Laughing in the chat room. John Cruz Blues. Or pretty soon we're going to be able to direct you to a website where you'll be able to hear his tunes on your own instead of just here through the studio like you have the last year, and even have the opportunity to buy some of these cuts and help a fellow survivor out. Well, what I typed in the chat room, and any of you listening out there who happen to be at your computer, if you want to play along, can go to YouTube, just YouTube, and then search Piano Guys, one word, P-I-A-N-O-G-U-Y-S, Piano Guys, and then go on to search Piano Guys, Carol of Bells. Carol of Bells. And I'm going to give you time to do that. And then you can come back and, well, I guess you don't have to turn down your volume. You really can make it like stereo. Listen to half me and half your own music box. But hang on to it. I'm going to give people time to find it. In the meantime, I'm going to play another one of our indies. And I was talking about this to this topic to somebody the other day, and for some reason this song has always just really resonated with me, and with varying degrees of success for reasons that he sings about. And I think I've heard some of the rest of us, audience and hosts alike, talk about this, but this is Daniel Christian, who is finding quite a bit of success out there on his own, traveling around a lot. I think he's just put out 4 CDs. His website, actually, I'll type in the chat and then I'll look that up for you. But anyway, something we all face from time to time, and that's finding our voice. And this song is by Daniel Christian called Find My Voice. And then we'll go to the YouTube.
The question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. Brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice.
Now is the time to make my choice. Now
Christian with Find My Voice. If you happen to be on Facebook right now, you're already at facebook.com/Daniel, DanielChristianMusic, DanielChristianMusic.com. That's also his website, Daniel Christian Music. And now the YouTube, and then I'll unmute some mics. Somebody who was on the line threatened, they were really in the Christmas spirit, and threatened to take a bath with their transistor if I was going to get into playing Christmas music. So I'm hoping that transistor is nearby. However, I am doing light here, so it won't be as bad as all that quite yet. Oh, gosh, now I lost my own song while I was screwing around doing that. Hang on, now I wound up in the R's. Oh, and we want the P's. Sorry, everybody. My bad. Got so many of these. I could send you to a different YouTube. We've got so many things in our deal right now. Well, all right, hang on. While you guys find it, let me find it again, and we'll do this for just a second. Maybe 6 seconds. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, gosh, I don't know why I'm just coming to peace. Oh, I know. Okay, Kim, figure out your own code here tonight. Everything under Christmas that was C. So no wonder I was having a problem with that. Okay, transistor radios and bathwater, let's go. This is the Piano Guys and really awesome video. Check it out. Carol of Bells. Wait a minute. That's not Carol of Bells. This is.
that is going to keep going. Wow, that was a trip. That was the kind of longer version or something. They really liked that song. The piano guys, that kind of took me by surprise. That song should have just ended, right? I do want to give some balance, and then I promise you I am going to open up the mics. If you want to call in, too, 424-243-9540. Of course, I don't mean you people who have already. I'll unmute some that had their hand up. If anyone else wants to talk, press 1, and I'll know that you want to talk. But in the essence of that balance, there was the Christmas Carol for those Bah Humbugs, and for the people who get in this place, I'm going to play another one of John Cruise's songs that has only been played on here once. He has suffered a lot of loss in his life, and I know around the holidays, one of the realities that we face or that we're challenged with is different triggers around the holidays about losses that we've incurred in our life. And John lost his wife to a brutal homicide when they had a small little girl. And this is a song that he dedicated to her among a couple that he's written. But this song is called Sweet Tennessee. And that's sending up a little prayer for those we've loved and lost this holiday season, and then I'll bring us back up tempo. I think I'll take you all on a roller coaster ride of emotional music tonight. How about that?
You can't stop the winds of change. You can't turn the sands of time. Doors they open up before your eyes. A brand new world for her to find. She's with the captain of her soul, sailing on a sea of life, taking her home. If I could just one more time bring her back to me, yeah, we'd meet one more time in sweet Tennessee. I found myself, then I found love. Kept me strong since you've been gone. We think about you every day. Our love for you lives on. She's with the captain of her soul, sailing on a sea of life, taking her home. If I could just one more time bring her back to me, yeah, we'd meet one more time in sweet Tennessee. You know our daughter grew up true and strong. You gave her the will to carry on. She's a life like you. And me, I just play in an old blues band. Waiting waiting at the station for the train to carry me home again. She's with the captain of her soul, sailing on a sea of light, taking her home. If I could just one more time bring her back to me, yeah, we'd meet one more time in sweet Tennessee.
John Cruise Blues, and that's a little something back-to-back, right, for the people making merry over the holiday season, the people feeling a little nostalgic or sad, like I say, about people we've loved and lost. The feelings tend to evoke, the season tends to evoke a lot of emotion, both joy and sadness, I think, especially when you have changing seasons like we do here. Somehow I think I might not be quite as nostalgic if I were laying on a beach someplace. But in any case, I was a little surprised. It's kind of a funny irony. The person that I noticed pop up on the phone is aware, has actually met John Cruise, and knows that I've been to hear him and that I've been playing him a little on the radio. But what they haven't heard is that we're a couple of us through Brain Injury Radio working as a team are going to do a little kind of a make-a-wish thing. John will have a website where he can actually make some of his music available to the world. He was so grateful when I started playing his music on the show, and he knew it was being heard all over the world. It hadn't been heard anywhere for a very long time. And to have a gift like that and not be able to share it and then have the opportunity, he's just felt so grateful and blessed and really a good friend of Brain Injury Radio. And now some of us are going to get together and pay it forward a little bit. He's got a lot of medical bills and going through a lot of stuff with this brain tumor. And so since he's joined the club, we'll do a little pay it forward. But oddly, I recognized something I didn't have on my reading glasses. But something suddenly popped out to me, and, you know, my guest is interviewed for the first hour and a half, and then the back half of the show is open mic and indie music. So I'm just wondering what you guys are doing here and what are you doing up so late? Is this my mother and father? Hello? Area code 402, you're on the air.
This is your mother and father.
What are you doing?
Listening to John Cruise and really enjoying it. It was very nice to hear him. Haven't seen him for a long time or heard him. So what a nice venue to introduce him and his music to all of America. You really are paying it forward. Good job, Kim.
Well, yeah, thank
you. Good job.
Well, everybody, yeah. Well, he's it's actually all over the United States and the about 36 countries, but audience that are listening, that was my mom. I'm assuming my dad's there in the background. They were probably fighting over who was going to have to talk on the phone since they didn't have their hand up and they thought they were invisible listening, I bet. But the reason my mom knows John is 20 years ago when I met him, he was a painter. He painted, what, your garage? Is that how you met him?
Yes, he did. He painted the inside of our garage. Did a beautiful job. He's almost as good at painting as he is at singing the blues.
And the thing, though, these 20 years later and with a tumor on his brain stem and having just gone through 38 radiation treatments and being on his own, he's had pretty inadequate benefit coverage through the VA and is still painting. He's trying to paint houses. He's you know, quite a bit older, 20 years older than when you saw him last time, and after all of that that he's been through, is out. In fact, he asked if anybody needed anything to be painted. So trying to go indoors now since it got a little cold, but he spent the whole summer in between radiation treatments out painting houses. So, you know, it was really cool that Craig, our founder, who's also a musician and with some acclaim, is we're just doing a little bit of help. And of course, John thinks that that's pretty cool that he's even being heard, and it'll be cool that his music will be someplace. You know, us old dogs, you know, who remember 45s and vinyl and we're used to buying the album, you know, now the kids, what's that, everything 40 and under, you can give away my age there. You know, they're buying it by the song, not the album, a lot of the time for their little iTunes and things like that. And so, you know, the market for music isn't any better than the market for books these days, but it's still great to be able to have your name out there, you know, for all your hard work. And he's really written a lot of heartfelt songs and has got a lot of new material he'd like to bring out on a new album. This brain journey that he's been on, he's gotten really, always had a pretty strong relationship with God, but gotten even more so. And I think there's going to be, he's never going to lose the blues, but I think it'll be more some spiritual blues kind of a thing. But I just noticed you guys pop on. I don't know how long you've been here, but there was a really good guest on tonight that you can catch in the archive. And if there's anything you want to say, I'm sorry I put you on the spot. I can let you talk more, or I can just park you and you can stay as long or as short as you like.
Okay, that would be good. I think you could park us, and we really enjoyed what we heard. We did miss the guest, I'm sorry to say, but it was just nice to hear. I hope the transistor person doesn't jump in the bathtub because it's a good show.
He just was in a humbug and doesn't like to hear Christmas carols, and I was threatening that I was going to be playing Christmas carols, and he said he'd feel like taking a bath with a transistor, so I was just giving him the opportunity to thing heated up before I put on the piano guys, and I'll be following that up in just a minute with one that you guys will also recognize, and thank you for being on tonight, and I will put you back on hold, and what a nice surprise. I will... Oh, pardon me. I guess I have a new mic up, and maybe I'll give a couple of you a chance to talk before I put another Christmas carol on for Craig. Area code 509. My parents are on the phone. Behave, please.
I was just going to say that all of his songs are on his Reverb page. They've all been translated, and they're all on there, and they're not for sale yet, but that'll be coming very soon, probably tomorrow.
Far out. So for those of you familiar with that in the audience, that's ReverbNation.com, and then you'd /John Cruz, C-R-E-W-S, Blues, John Cruz Blues on Reverb Nation, and you'll get to hear some of these songs I've been playing. Thank you, Craig, for getting those up there. I'm really excited, and John doesn't know about a lot of this yet, and I thought it'd be kind of cool, and you've already done part of it. It looks like we'll be able to show him this for Christmas, and John doesn't even have a computer, but I've been in touch with his daughter, Lindsay, who's now just turned 30, and he has three little grandbabies, and she's married to a kind of techie person who's been helping us too, and then Craig has done a little on this end to help us, and Les Paul and myself and my husband Gary, and this is going to be kind of cool timing, because John will get to go over to his daughter's house on Christmas, and they'll really have a surprise for him. I'd love to be a fly on the wall. Hopefully Lindsay will get a picture for us.
That'd be cool, like the shock factor. And then we'll put that on his front page.
Yeah, we're looking for some more pictures for his web page, so that would be really good. Don't give the old man a heart attack when he's suffering this other thing, but I think he'll be really grateful. I tried to find the web page, and I didn't find that, but I ran out of time reading my guest's book before the show, and so I hadn't been to Reverb today, but that's great. Thank you so much for letting us know, and I'll type that in the chat room for people who aren't familiar with it. I was never.
It still needs a little more work, but it's got a couple of the videos I found of him around. It's got his songs you sent me. Anything else we can get up there, get to me. I mean, need some bios, and I think a gal in Omaha was going to do some bios and make it really stand out, and so we're ready.
Yeah.
It can be something nice for him for Christmas, I think. Once you get those personalized vials on there, I think that's going to touch him.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'll get with Lindsay and get that bio. So I think that'll be really good. I'll plan on doing that this weekend. I understand that this was our last kind of nice day and that we're going to go back into the deep freeze. So I'll probably be more than ready to do some of that work, and I'll talk to Lindsay and we'll get together a nice little bio and get that to you. So that's awesome. Thanks for letting me know that.
Yeah, I have. And you might listen to them, make sure they uploaded and everything, okay? Because they're there. It says they're there, but I've been just working on the shell, and they're there. I'm almost positive they're there. You know, it says they're there. So whatever you
okay.
Say.
Well, if it says they're there, by golly, they ought to be there. So, okay, good. Well, I'll check that out in just a little while then. Thanks. And
you're welcome.
Now, whoops, I'm sorry, Craig, I didn't mean to do that. I just cut off the chief by accident. It was already spinning. Sorry about that. But as a matter of fact, it was him, our good deed doer who threatened to bathe with the radio. So another thing my parents will remember is the video I made last year. And as a matter of fact, on the Brain Injury Radio Facebook page and on my In a Flash Facebook page, I'll put this on tomorrow. I haven't made one this year. Time's running short. I probably won't. But last year, I made our family a video to music Christmas card, and it was, I heard this song and I just thought it nailed it. This is Matthew West with The Heart of Christmas. Helps keep things in perspective.
This Christmas, I'm gonna say a little prayer. I'm gonna stop here for a moment before the moment disappears. The world's in a hurry this December. The city streets and shopping malls. I wish we could slow down and remember the meaning of it all. Wherever you are, no matter how far, come back to the heart of Christmas. Live while you can, cherish the moment, and the ones that you love, make sure they know it. And
Make sure they know it, and don't miss.
That was Matthew West with The Heart of Christmas. And if you check, actually, I can probably find that myself on YouTube. So after the show, if you want to check the Brain Injury Radio Facebook page or my In a Flash Facebook page, I'll see if I can't find that and post it. And I will unmute Les Paul. Would you like to say goodnight to my mom and dad before they go? This is who I call our Southern Gentleman, the Tuesday night host, Les Paul Morgan. They've heard me talk a lot about you. I see they're hanging out. They're probably going to drop off here in a moment.
Well, good night to your mom and dad. I'm playing the way I said that. It's nice to have your mother and father there. I heard them say they were fans of John Cruise, too. It shows he even goes through generations. His music is amazing. And by the way, I just played 3 snippets of the music that Craig posted, and I heard it, and it sounded beautiful. So I think he's got it up and ready to go. I listened to it just a moment ago.
Good. I tried finding the site today, and I didn't see it, but I didn't, like I said, have time to go to Reverb Nation. I was briefing myself on Katz LeBlanc, my great guest tonight. Make sure to check her out on Lash Publishing. And Allie, I'm going to bring you on the line, and I'll bring Craig on the line for a minute before we're winding down, and I'll play a couple more Christmas songs just because I have them. Craiger, even though you are doing good deeds, it's the holiday season for another week or so, and you're just going to have to deal with it. Allie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good night, Mom and Dad. Thanks for bringing Kim into the world.
That's for sure. Thank you very much for her.
Oh, God. Well, it was a big surprise. I didn't think they knew how to find me yet. It's
now
gotten every time
I'm playing.
Well, I was going to say, it's not that. It's you guys have said every time we hosts get this figured out, they change the configuration of the pages. And I know some of our regular listeners have had a hard time finding us. So I was just kind of surprised when I glanced down. I hadn't been watching the chat or the switchboard. So I don't know how long, anyway, that they had been there, but that's a cool surprise. And yeah, and it was just funny that they happened to be there on a night when this was happening. I haven't had a chance to let them know that what was going on, what we were doing with John Cruise. They saw the pictures when I went and heard him at McKenna's Live, but didn't know that we were kind of decided to do this deal right now. So it was ironic they'd call in tonight and hear that. But he's a great guy, and this will be like a dream come true. So that's just awesome that we're able to give really, you know, what's just a pretty little piece. I mean, it'd be easy for something to be to let it go, but you know, for each person in the chain, it's a little piece, and the willingness to put those little pieces together, you know, to make something so big happen for someone is really awesome to be able to take part in that, don't you think?
One word that I can say, just one, gratitude. And that was something you talked about not long ago on one of your shows. The gratitude of getting to help someone else who's going through a rough time, even though we've been through rough times, I think that's beautiful. I think it's absolutely beautiful what you and everyone has done here. Look what Craig did, posting that on here and working to do that just before Christmas. I'd like to see it go viral around the world and help one man, which could help another man, which could help another person, which could help another lady or a child. And that's what Brain Injury Radio is about. I think it's amazing.
Yeah,
and you were the catalyst.
Trying to make people feel good is what we try to do, or give them hope. And if it gives them a sense of hope, and that's sometimes all you need to get by, is a little sense of hope.
It is.
Yeah, I think so. Well, and I I think that's what's important, you know, for people who've changed their lives. Allie, is that you?
It is me. I just wanted to say something before I kind of put my phone on mute. Hi to your parents. Hi, Kim's mom and dad.
This is
that
Allie
is
from BC.
Such a beautiful surprise. Yeah.
It is.
And I just want to let you all know what a treasured jewel your daughter is to us in our community. And she is phenomenal.
Okay,
and I am so
to
grateful
that.
To have connected with her and the other hosts. And I'm very grateful to Craig for even birthing such a brain chalicis. And we're just, you know, it's one of those things where I regard myself as fortunate to revel and bask in the comforting waters that this community offers. And so you probably haven't gotten a sense of that just listening on the air tonight. And I can hear Kim sounding a little flustered, maybe because she knows her parents are on the line, and that happens. But she is phenomenal, and she's very stellar.
Absolutely.
She is A++ in her delivery of content and her interviewing skills, and she always brings wonderful guests on that have just oodles of information that we would not have come into the knowledge of were it not for this format. And so I just wanted to share that so that you all could know your daughter beyond your own eyes and your own experience and what she means to so many other people. And Blog Talk Radio broadcast throughout, I'm not sure where, but who was saying we had something like 200,000 listeners recently or something?
Yeah,
you remember
that
stat? Right.
Our yearly total, yeah, we have several hundred thousand people that listen, but we don't know exactly how many. Who knows? Maybe it's,
right.
You know, even if it's one, it don't matter. It was, you know, originally
exactly.
It was for one person. It was, you know, I wanted just to talk.
Yeah. Well, it has really just taken off and germinated beautifully, and I am a recipient and beneficiary of all that's available here. And I think that was it. Oh, about John Cruise. I also think that's wonderful. It's almost like a holiday miracle. I'm sure he'll receive it that way. And what's so beautiful about experiences like this is that not only will it inspire him to pay it forward, but it'll inspire so many other people who are bearing witness to such a generous gifting of self to do something in like kind and bless someone else. So it's one of those things that has a ripple effect. You don't know where and how far the reach is. You don't know where, you know, this
exactly.
blessing is going to go and how far the reach. But, you know, it's one of those things where you just kind of put yourself out there and show up and show out and allow God to work through you, and each of us are conduits for good if we choose to allow ourselves to be used that way. So I think it's wonderful.
I know he'd be appreciative, very appreciative.
I don't believe it's a coincidence or accident that it happened the way it did, but I believe the true miracle and blessing of it is that you took it and ran with it. Some people might have said, I don't know what to do with this, or been frightened or turned away asking someone else for help. But you took it, Kim, and you spoke with me and you spoke with others. You spoke with Craig. What can we do? And we came up with ideas together, all of us did. And before long, here we are working to help somebody that we personally didn't know. I've never met him. But when I heard his music, it touched my soul. I said, I'll do anything. I'll promote him, post him all over the Internet any way I can. You tell me what I need to do, and I'll do it. Because he's a survival story that needs to be heard, like many millions of survivors need to be heard all over the country one at a time or hundreds at a time or however it needs to be shared, just to show that hope. And that's all I'll say
here,
because I know you're running out of time.
I think so, too. Well, thank you. Thank you. And that is going to be a really awesome deal. He'll always have the blues. And what's that it says? It was when Adam met Eve that the blues began. One of the other things I like to do during the show, and we are just running down, so as you see, I muted you guys for just a minute. We just have a few minutes left, and one of the things that I also like to recognize and do well every day, but particularly through the holidays and the dedicated holidays, but that's pay tribute to our veterans and the sacrifices that they've made and that they're still making. Think about it being kind of hard for them over the holidays to be so far away from home, giving of their selves for all of us. And so one of our great indies, he lives in Albany, New York, Chris Dukes, and you can find him if you're on Facebook. You're already at facebook.com/ChrisDukes. Chris Dukes Music and Chris Dukes Band, I'm sorry, and www.chrisdukesband for his website. And by the way, if you guys are still on YouTube, anyone out in Radio Land who is on YouTube, if you can move quick, I'll talk slow because this is worth seeing, but type in Chris Dukes Heroes, H-E-R-O-E-S, Chris Dukes Heroes in the search window of YouTube. And as I said, Chris is just a really wonderful guy, an independent musician, a friend of Brain Injury Radio out of Albany, New York. He made a wonderful video. And thank you to all of our veterans. And we hope that they and their families enjoy a good holiday season. And this is Chris Dukes with Heroes, not only for our veterans, but all those people that have touched and impacted our lives in a positive way, that will carry parts of them in our hearts forever. Chris Dukes with Heroes.
Afghanistan. On lonely nighttime watch, he hopes silence keeps away. my heroes, Mataros. You're my brothers and my sisters, standing up against the cold. My hero, and always know.
Again, that's Chris Dukes, Chris Dukes Band, and that was the song Heroes. This is Kim Justice for Brain Injury Radio Network. We've just rolled down to the end of the hour. I was going to close it with a Christmas carol, but I think under the circumstances and the fact that it's the way I close my show every time I close my show, this is something that I believe we all have. I want to thank you all for being here tonight. I appreciate your support and participation. Here's something I believe we all have, and that is a guardian angel. Check out Leah West, LEAHWEST.com, and this is Guardian Angel, and I'll send this one out to my mother tonight. Good night, everybody, and thanks.
Little baby up in heaven says to God, do I really have to go? And God replies, yes, it's your time to leave, but don't you worry, you won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you, quietly hoping and praying for your sweet and safe arrival down on higher than